Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. If I could have your attention, please. First of all, phones on silent, please. Secondly, I'd just like to mention that, as you all know, this slot has been for a long time the slot of Rabbi Gold, who sadly hasn't been able to do for the last few weeks, but he's coming back to this slot. I am moving to Wednesday at 11:30, starting September the 4th. So if you're interested, starting September the 4th, I'm staying here in this hall, in this wonderful center, in this country, yes. And so starting as of after the summer break, in September, we're on for Wednesday at 11:30. Please look at your Torah tidbits. Half the world seems to look at the Torah tidbits, and make sure you're well informed. Before we look at the sheet, what do you say? The topic for the Wednesdays. Yes, it is officially not, it's officially not going to be called Parshta Shavua because this is the Parshta Shavua slot. The topic is going to be called Great Jewish Thinkers, where I'll be giving short series of topics from great from the Ramchal, the Rambam, the Maharal, the Gedolei Yisrael in the field of Machshava. But I will have a Parshat HaShavua angle on my shiurim as well. It will be, part of it will be angled towards material in the weekly Parsha, but the topic will be great Jewish thinkers. Thank you for that question, just reminding me for the title of the of the shiurim. Just wanted to begin by mentioning something interesting and I think beautiful in the halachas of Tisha B'Av, that we don't learn Torah on Tisha B'Av, says the Shulchan Aruch. Why are we not allowed to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av? Pikudei Hashem Yesharim Mesamchei Lev. That when one learns Torah, it should be a great pleasure. It should be a simcha. The simcha of learning Torah is forbidden on Tisha B'Av, as are all other types of simcha. And this is a little bit curious, exactly. I would have thought Tisha B'Av is a spiritual day and learning Torah might be a good idea, but Chazal told us that the simcha of it is not appropriate on Tisha B'Av. And I wanted just to mention to you a very interesting idea I saw in Chazal, is a Gemara in the Dorim, Daf Pei Aleph, where the Gemara learns a pasuk of Yirmiyah in the Haftorah of Tisha B'Av morning from Yirmiyah chapter 9. So Yirmiyah says, Mi ho ish hechacham v'yovein zeis al me'e ovdo ha'aretz. Yirmiyah asks, who is a chacham so great to understand al me'e ovdo ha'aretz? Why was Eretz Yisrael lost? Why was there a churban? Which is a curious question at first sight, because all the Nevi'im had been telling Klal Yisrael repeatedly, Avodah Zarah, Shvichus Domim, Gilu Arayos, the worst Averis possible, had been committed. And nevertheless, Yirmiyah asks this question, and the Gemara in Adorim Pei Aleph says that actually this question was asked to the Chachamim and asked to the Nevi'im, and they didn't know the answer, which is even more curious. Until the pasuk ends, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers Yirmiyah and says, Al ozvom es teirasi, because they abandoned my Torah. Which is also curious, because if they abandoned the Torah, then everybody, the Chachamim and the Nevi'im, everybody should know why the Churban took place. So the Gemara gives also a very interesting, very curious answer. The Gemara answers, Om Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Sheloi birchu batayra techila. The Aveira was, they didn't make Birkas HaTorah before learning Torah. Extraordinary answer, that should be the reason for the Churban, a seemingly slight violation not to make Birkas HaTorah. Incidentally, Chazal are using this pasuk just to remind us of the importance of Birkas HaTorah. every morning in Birkas HaShachar, men and women should make Birkas HaTorah. It's a special mitzvah both for men and for women every morning to make the three brachas of Birkas HaTorah. But that's not my topic this morning. What's interesting is the Maharal, in his introduction, his Hakdama to Sefer Tiferes Yisrael, he deals with this. And he says, of course, the real Averis were Avodah Zarah. Obviously, it's quite clear from all the Nevi'im. But the Gemara is asking, what was the Sheresh? What was the, if you like, the source? How did they come to do the Averis that they did? And it was Shelo Birchu Batera Techila, to which the Rishonim say, maybe they did make a Birkas HaTorah beforehand, but they weren't Machshiv Torah. They didn't enjoy, and they didn't get pleasure from learning Torah. They learned Torah because they felt obligated to do so, because they felt that it was the right thing to do, but they didn't get Hanah from it. Right? The Ran says, for example, the Chazal tell us, that one shouldn't get pleasure. Also, lehonos me'olam hazeh below bracha. We make a bracha, bara priya eit, shakol ni'e bedvaro, before deriving any benefit. So the Rishonim seem to take the view that Birkas HaTorah is also along those lines. It's also a Birkas HaMitzvahs, but it's also a Birkas HaNenin. You should be getting hanah from learning Torah, right? That's what we say, v'ha'arev no Hashem elokeinu divrei Torascha, v'orev v'ha'arev with an ayin means it should be tasty and pleasurable. Pleasure should be pleasant, right? It should be pleasant and tasty and pleasurable. They didn't find it pleasurable. So learning Torah without finding pleasure in the Torah, without feeling that it's something wonderful and a privilege to sit and learn Torah, somehow is an issue which Chazal connect with the Churban HaBayis, and clearly it's a way Chazal have of giving us a bit of Musa, that when we learn Torah, we should have the right attitude towards it, that we're not doing God a favor, but on the contrary, he's doing us a favor in enabling us the great privilege of being allowed to learn Torah. You're absolutely right. There is an issue of doing mitzvahs shelo lishma, that you will eventually come to do it for the eventually come to do it for the right reasons. You're absolutely right. But here we're not dealing with that. Here what we're dealing with is a deeper understanding of why generations of Yidden in some way who were learning Torah and were doing mitzvahs, somehow at the root of it, they had the wrong attitude to it. They didn't understand, they didn't feel the great simcha and the privilege in doing it. And because of that, in some way, the Torah didn't protect them. Learning Torah should protect someone from doing Averis. If someone's learning Torah and ends up doing Averis, it means that his Torah learning is not being done properly. It's not being done with the right attitudes. It's not being done with the right simcha and the right emunah. Torah is mogein umatzil, it protects a person from Averis. And this is a rather lengthier subject. I don't want to spend the whole shir on it, but I just wanted to connect our learning here, which I feel is done besimcha. I think the learning here is done with joy and with pleasure. And it's something which has been, I think, discovered, I would say, in the last couple of generations, that Talmud Torah is a wonderful recreational activity. It's something you enjoy. It's not something you do out of duty. You don't do it out of necessity. You do it because what else is there to do which is so enjoyable as Talmud Torah? I certainly feel that. And I feel also in this shiur that we learn besimcha, that we learn with joy and with pleasure, and that is our Birkas HaTorah. This leads us actually into the first item on the sheet in front of you. If you have a look at the sheet in front of you, the Pasuk reads, are there any more sheets? Are there any more sheets? Okay. There was a first edition and a second edition. We need a few more sheets if somebody here is able to. That's not the right sheet. That's not the sheet. That's not the sheet. That's not the sheet. What you've just handed to her is not the right sheet. The right sheet should have my name at the top. Okay, we have on reliable information that there are some more sheets in the pipeline. And We look forward to seeing them in the near future. Meanwhile, for those of you who don't have a sheet, the beginning of the shiur will be Teresh Baal Peh. And you'll have to believe me when I read you the pasuk. The pasuk reads, "Vayeschanan el Hashem bo'eis ha'hi leimar." The first six words of this week's parsha introduces Moshe Rabbeinu's fervent tefillah. Moshe Rabbeinu davens intensely and powerfully. For what? What is he davening for? Just to remind you, Moshe Rabbeinu is in the last month of his life, at the end of the 40 years in the Midbar, and he's davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to allow him to go into Eretz Yisrael. One of the great tragedies of the Torah is that Moshe Rabbeinu gets to the threshold of Eretz Yisrael, but isn't allowed in. In Voeschanan, he's davening again and again and again. And in fact, Chazal say the word Voeschanan, Rashi brings down as a gematria 515, that he davened 515 tefillos to be allowed into Eretz Yisrael. And what was the answer? No. So here's an interesting question. Why would the Torah go to such great lengths to teach us this tefillah if in fact it was not effective? It was not successful. So there's a much deeper understanding here. The first deep understanding is that often a tefillah is not successful. Sometimes we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the tefillah is a good tefillah and it's done with all the right kavanas, as we are sure Moshe Rabbeinu did. But the answer is no. No means it doesn't fit in with the divine plan. The divine plan for Klal Yisrael, divine plan for your community, for you personally, for your family, whatever it is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in addition to the world of Bechira, where we choose to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we choose to ask for certain things, and we choose to live the life we lead, there's also concurrently the world of Hashkacha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running this world, and he has a certain plan, and for which we don't have Bechira. Right, we can't choose what the plan for the world is. And it was part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkacha for Klal Yisrael that Moshe Rabbeinu would not go into Eretz Yisrael. Why he wouldn't go into Eretz Yisrael, that's already a longer story. But Chazal tell us that had Moshe Rabbeinu gone into Eretz Yisrael, then the whole of the Yishuv Eretz Yisrael would have been totally different, and that wasn't part of God's plan. I can't go into that for the moment. That's a separate subject for a whole separate shiur. I call upon him, Moshe Rabbeinu davens, and the answer is no. He davens intensely. So what's the point, really, of telling us about this tefillah? So there are a few very interesting themes here. And one of them is that Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, more than anything else, he is Rabbeinu. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching us everything. And here he's teaching us how to daven. That's what's going on here. It might be in this particular case the answer was no, but in the meantime, Moshe Rabbeinu has given us a master class in how to daven. When you stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you daven, you can't just speak the way you would normally speak. You have to know what to say. Right? When you want to say thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you don't say thank you, you say Hodul Hashem Ki Tov Ki Le'olam Chasdei. There's a way to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? A friend of mine a few years ago received the OBE from the Queen of England, and before he went in to receive it, he was given a whole instructions, a protocol, how you speak to the Queen. You don't say, hi there, good morning, Elizabeth. That's not the way you talk to her. And you don't say, Your Highness, you say, Your Majesty. There's a way to speak. When you speak to the Melech Malchei Amlochim, there's a way to speak and a way not to speak. Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching us how to daven to the Rabbeinu Shalom. Okay. Of course, the other aspect of this tefillah is to emphasize, and this is the Medrash focuses on, to emphasize Moshe's great desire to go into Eretz Yisrael. He was devastated not to be allowed in. And again, that's what he was teaching us. He was teaching us the great desire that everyone should have to want to live in Eretz Yisrael. Even after having been told that he can't, he didn't take that decree passively. He tried his utmost to petition against that decree, and therefore that's also part of the lesson. But if you have a look at the text in front of you, so that at the top you have the pasuk, and then you have text number one, I see it's been penciled in here, which is Rashi. So Rashi is interested in the word va'etchanan. There are many different words used for tefillah in the Tanakh, and va'etchanan is an unusual one. So Rashi says, va'etchanan, ein chanun b'chol mokeim el aloshen matnas chinom. Rashi says that a deeper level of understanding of the word v'etchanan is that Moshe Rabbeinu is asking for a matnat chinam. He's asking for a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is chinam, means that he's undeserved. An undeserved gift. As you know, we start off every Shemon Esra by saying, Gomel chasodim tovim b'kone hakol, that actually we're not asking for anything because we deserve it. We're asking for HaKadosh Baruch Hu because of Chasdei Hashem. And that actually it's a philosophical, theological error ever to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, I'm asking for this because I deserve it, right? Even though, you know, we live in a generation where people feel entitled to all sorts of things, the entitlements that people feel, and one might feel that one can turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, look, you know, I did a mitzvah yesterday, I want my tefillahs answered, right? And therefore I deserve it. Here Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching us the way to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to daven for Chasdei Hashem. So the obvious reason for that is because if you ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something because you deserve it, the answer might be, really? Let's take out the book of Cheshbonos and let's make a tally of all the things you've done right and all the things you've done wrong, and let's see what you really deserve. So we don't want that, right? We don't want to live under the scrutiny of the Dinei Shomayim. So we want to be able to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, we are davening for a matnas chinam. We want a gift. We're asking for a gift. And the word v'eschanan is one of the famous places where this idea is emphasized. Look at Rashi here. Ein chanun b'chol mokam eloshon matnas chinam. Af al pi sheyesh lohem letzadikim litlois ma'aseyem atovim. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't short of ma'asim tovim, which he could have cited on his own behalf. He could have said, look, I did this, I did that, I did all these great things for 40 years. What didn't I do? I was most a nefesh for Klal Yisrael at so many different levels. Surely I deserve to be allowed into Eretz Yisrael. Ein mevakshin me'eis hamakam ela matnas chinam. And this Rashi is a very important principle of life in general and of our state of mind when we're standing in tefillah. You stand in tefillah and you say, really, I deserve nothing. I'm asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Chasdei Shamayim. When people bench Gomel, for example, interesting, Chazal gave us the Nusach of benching Gomel, HaGomel L'Chayovim Tovas, Shegimul Anei Kota. What does Chayovim here mean? Chayovim means HaKadosh Baruch Hu has looked after me, even though I am Chayovim means I'm undeserving. I'm Chayev. I'm not someone who is deserving of the goodness HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for me. HaGomel L'Chayovim Tovas, Shegimul Anei Kota. He's done for me good, even though I don't deserve it at all. I've been saved from a danger. I've been saved from a difficult situation. So the chayovim here is actually exactly this idea here in Rashi, the concept of an undeserving tefillah. That's part of our anova when we stand before our Kadosh Baruch Hu, that we stand and feel a petitioner, an undeserving petitioner, standing in tefillah, and that's for eschanan. Yes? Yes, okay, all right. So the truth is, there are Zuchus Ovis is not something. The question was, where does the reference for Zuchus Ovis fit into this? Of course, we do, when we cite Zuchus Ovis, what we're doing is we're really, if you like, justifying our ability to stand before our Kodesh Baruch Hu at all. We're saying we're not coming here as an individual. We only have a right to stand before our Kodesh Baruch Hu because we are B'nai Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov and our ancestors and our Babas and our Zaydas who are Tzadikim. They made it possible for us to stand here. But your question is a good question. Your question is a good question and it's really quite a lengthy answer. I've actually brought you here in text number 3, the Maharal on Rashi. There is a commentary of the Maharal of Prague on Rashi, which is called the Gur Aryeh, which is not such a popular work because it's very lengthy and complex. But I've just really picked out a couple of excuse me, a couple of lines in text number 3. So Gur Arya says, quotes Rashi, Ein Mavakshin Lematnas Chinom. So he says, Ubevadai Hodich Sibay Tzemer Sheloshin Tefillah Vespalal Hashem Parshas Eikev. He brings down a whole list. I've edited out some of them to get it all on the page. Maral brings out a whole list of places where it doesn't say Voeschanan. It says Voespalal. It uses other language. So there is an implication that Moshe Rabbeinu does cite a certain Zuchuyos. And in answer to your question, you know, for example, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu, right, at the Egel Azov, turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, Zechor al Avraham, Yitzchak al Yaakov, and he cites Zechus Ovis. So he does cite certain benefits. Have a look what he writes here, the Maral, very interestingly. Ein Zeh Kasha. Can you see in the second line of the text number 3, in the second line, Ein Zeh Kasha. This is not a question. Incidentally, whenever the Rishonim say this is not a question, what they mean is it's a fabulous question, just I've got an answer to it. That's what Ein Zeh Kasha is, a stylistic way of saying this question can be resolved, right? Of course, it is a kasha. It's a tremendous kasha on Rashi. So he says, Sha'atzadikim eino mevakshim ela matnas chinom kasha mispalalim al atzmo. The Maral makes a very interesting distinction. A distinction between when you daven for yourself or you daven for others. Or you're davening for Klal Yisrael, or you're davening for somebody else who's in need, then you're allowed to cite all sorts of different zechuyos, right? But only when you daven for yourself, kasha mispalim atzma she'eino mizgayim atzadikim lo ma she'esh lehem zechus, the tzadikim never cite their own zechus. That's what Rashi means. So the Gur Arya is deepening a little bit for us our understanding of Rashi and our understanding of this concept, that actually, yes, we do ask for Chasdei Shamayim, but that's particularly true when we're davening for ourselves. When we daven for others, then we can cite all sorts of different zechuyos of why they should be saved. Ukshahim ispalim alachirim einam avakshim matnaschirim adraba. Kshemispalim alacher mazke zechus osa acher shemispalim alav ve'ein bezeh shum gaiva. To speak about the zechus of the person you're davening for. If you're davening for somebody else, you can certainly cite their merits. But you shouldn't cite your own merits. So the two reasons. Maral mentions the word gaiva here a couple of times, so it's clear that Maral feels that it's a problem of anova. It's a question of modesty. You never stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and speak about your great achievements. Right? That's a question of anova. That's an attitude of modesty. But the truth is, it's much more than that. When one stands before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and one thinks about the things one has done right, Baruch Hashem, we've all done one or two mitzvahs here and there, right? We've done some acts of chesed, we've kept Shabbos and Yom Tov and brought up families and done all sorts of mitzvahs. Why shouldn't we cite our own zuchuyas? And the answer to that is clear. The answer to that is that we are overwhelmed by a sense of the privilege of doing a mitzvah. It's actually a privilege for us that we've been fortunate enough to live a life where we've done mitzvahs, where we've learned some Torah. We don't feel that we have done it in a way which is deserving of reward. It's a reward in and of itself. It's self-rewarding. It's wonderful that we have this opportunity to do mitzvahs, and therefore those zechuyos shouldn't be cited in our tefillahs. Okay, so this is the beginning, Voeschanan, an interesting word to start off the parsha. I mentioned to you last week, I'll come back to that if I have time a bit later on, that Devarim is unique, right? The Sefer Devarim has features to it which don't appear anywhere else in Bereishis, Shemos, Vayikra, Bamidbar. It's written in a different style, in a different way. It's got a different message, and Moshe Rabbeinu is functioning on a different level when he gives us Sefer Devarim. One of the interesting things is that in Sefer Devarim you don't find ever Vayidaber Hashem or Moshe Lamer. You don't find that through the whole of the Chumash. It's Vayidaber Hashem or Moshe Lamer, that the Pasuk says Moshe Rabbeinu received at Tzivoy Hashem and he's transmitting it here. It's not, the parasha doesn't start off Vayidaber Hashem or Moshe Lamer, but it's Chanan al Hashem. Right, and next week is Ekev Ahoyo, Ekev Tishmon, right, and then it's Atem Nitzovim Hayom. The parshas start off never with Vayidaber Hashem or Moshe Lamer. That's not the style. It's Moshe Rabbeinu speaking as if, and I emphasize, as if it's his own words, as if it's not Min HaShamayim, but actually everything that he says is the Dvar Hashem. And as I mentioned to you last week, this has got to do with the beginnings of Torah Sheba'al Peh. The beginnings of Torah Sheba'al Peh are hidden in Sefer Devarim. I mentioned to you last week in the Shia, and there's a very beautiful Hamikdava on that. So I mentioned to you before that one of the reasons the Torah emphasizes Moshe Rabbeinu's davening is to teach us how to daven. If you have a look at text number 4, you'll see to what extent this is true. See, this is a Gemara in Brachos Lamed Beis, which is an extremely important Gemara, which was the basis on which Chazal authored our Shemon Esra. Now, you know that the Shemon Esra that we have, right, the Amida that we have, was authored by the Anshei Knesset HaGdela. Right, at the time of Ezra, at the beginning of the Bais Sheni period, Ezra and the Anshei Knesset HaGdela, they were the final authors of the what we call today the Siddur. The Siddur didn't come down from Sinai. The Siddur was put together by Chazal at the end of the biblical era, the end of the Nevuah, and at the beginning of the period of the Tanaim, and they gave us the format. Now, the mitzvah of davening, that comes midaraisa, that comes from the Torah. But prior to the time of Ezra, meaning the first 1,000 years approximately of Jewish history, there was a mitzvah to daven, but there was no nusach. There was no nusach. You had to make up your own tefillahs. You had to decide how you wanted to daven. And people davened their own. All they had was, possibly beforehand, the earliest siddur was Sefer Tehillim. Before that, they had Sefer Tehillim, and that was used as a type of a siddur. A kolponim, when they came to author the Shemona Esra, which is the classic text of all our davening all year round, they used a formula which is rooted in the opening psukim of Parshas Vayeshanah. And I want just to show you this, your text number 4 in the sheet in front of you, because it's very fascinating. Says the Gemara, text number 4, Brachos Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, Dorash Rav Samloi. So Rav Samloi learnt, Le'olam Yesade Odom Shivcho Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'achakach Yispalel. A person should always preface his requests of davening with the shevach, the praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? In other words, one has to find a formula. These are not words of bakosha. You're not asking for anything in the first 3 brachas of the Shemona Esra. We're not requesting anything. We're just saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is melech, oizeh, mashiach, mogein. This is what's called shevach. This is praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, designed to, if you like, focus our awareness that we're standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he is Mechalke Chaim Bechesed, he's the source of all life, right? Up to and including Mechaya Mesim, Ata Kodesh, Shimcha Kodesh. Until Baruch HaTo Hashem, okay, HaKadosh, we haven't yet asked for anything. Right? We haven't yet asked for anything. In fact, there was a whole very fierce debate in the time of the Rishonim, whether one was allowed to introduce those short additions that we say during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, right? That we say, Zochreinu l'chaim, melech chofetz b'chaim, v'kosveinu b'sefer achaim. How come we're putting that in? There were many Rishonim who were very angry about that. Why are you putting in Zachreinu L'chaim, Melech Chofetz B'chaim in the first 3 brachos of the Shemona Esra, which were only Shevach? Why are you putting a bakosha, a petition, a request? It's wrongly placed. To which the answer by other Rishonim was given that during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, it's Pikuach Nefesh. In other words, our lives are hanging by a thread and we're allowed to introduce it. But you should know there are many Rishonim who didn't say Zachreinu L'chaim, right? And in actual fact, that's why the halacha is that if you miss out Zachreinu L'chaim, you don't go back, you don't repeat the Shemona Esra. You don't invalidate your Shemona Esra by missing out Zachreinu L'chaim, because there were many Rishonim who held that it was also to put it in. Why? Because of this Gemara. This Gemara is based on the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he starts off his tefillah in Vayeshanan, he starts off by saying Ata achilosu laharas avduchos godluchos yodcha chazaka asher mi eil bashamayim ova'oretz asher yasek ma'asecha b'chigvurasecha. His first pasuk is only shevach. His first pasuk is only praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He doesn't start with the bakasha. He starts with shevach, says Rav Samloi, and that was the guiding principle of Chazal when they wrote the Siddur. You start with shevach. You first start with these three psukim of praise, back to text number 4 in your sheet. So Rav Samloi asks Minolon, the last word on the first line, Minolon, from where do I know this? Mimosha, I learned this out from Moshe, Dixiv Eschana Lashem Ba'isahi. And only I'm now looking at the fourth line of text number 4. And after he's said all this shevach, this praise, then he says, then he places his request, let me please cross the Jordan and be in Israel. Be in the land of Israel, but he starts with Shevach. I've edited this piece of Gemara a little bit, and the Gemara goes on to say, and then after you've had your praise, after you've asked your request, then the third stage is what's called Hoda'ah, is Modim Anachnu Lach, is thanksgiving. So basically, every Shemona Esra has got the first three brachas are called Shevach, and there's no petition. The last three brachas are called Hoda'ah, thanksgiving for the chesed that we have received already, right? Al chayenu hamsurim biyodecha, al nisecho shebchol yamimono, hatov ki lachol rachamecha. All that is thanksgiving, right? And only sandwiched between the praise and the thanksgiving, we are allowed to make requests. That's the formula that we live with, and that Klal Yisrael have lived with our tefillahs forever. And where does it come from? From the opening psukim of Voeschanan, that Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's why we asked the question at the beginning of the Shia, why would the Torah tell us this tefillah if it wasn't successful? The answer is we're learning how to daven. Moshe Rabbeinu is the arch Rebbe. He is the greatest of all the Rabbeim, and he's teaching us a masterclass in tefillah, and that's the way we are expected to daven. Let's move on a little bit. I can see time is always. I never manage in this shiurim to do even half of the material that I prepared, but I do try and put in as much as I can. In the sheet in front of you, text number 5. Before you read text number 5, of course, you understand that in Parshas Voeschanan, we also have the Ten Commandments. Moshe Rabbeinu gives us the second version of the Ten Commandments, which are subtly different from the first version in Parshas Yisro, and that's a whole shia. Why the differences come here, I'm not going to go into that for the moment, but after he's given us the second version of the Aseret HaDibros, which are slightly different, he says the following pasuk. Everybody with me? Text number 5. Es hadvorim ho'ele, these words, referring to the Ten Commandments, Dibir Hashem el kol kahalchem bahar, is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to the whole nation at the mountain. Mitocho eish, his voice came out of the fire, he'onon v'harofel, and the cloud, and mist. And here comes the important word I want to look at this morning. Kol godol velo yasaf, a great voice of God, velo yosaf. So what does velo yosaf mean? A bit of a mysterious little phrase here. Let's just finish up the pasuk. And what he said, he wrote down on two luchos and gave them to me. Okay, so the two luchos we know about, the words of Aseret HaDibros we know about. What is this kol godol velo yasaf? Okay, now what's very interesting in Lashon HaKodesh, so this is a key word here. What's interesting in Lashon HaKodesh is that certain key words have an ambiguity to them, which is not an ambiguity which makes them unclear, but it's a very profound ambiguity. I want to show you what I mean. Quick look at Rashi, text number 6. Rashi says, Velo Yosaf. says Matargaminon. So Rashi first follows the Targum. He says Velo Pasak. Velo Pasak means it never stopped. The Kol Hashem, by definition, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is the Ein Sof. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is infinite. And therefore the Kol Hashem that was heard at Sinai is itself infinite and never stopped. All that happened was at Har Sinai, Klal Yisrael had a unique moment that they were able to tune in and hear the Dvar Hashem. But actually the Dvar Hashem at Har Sinai is constant, is something which is eternal. It's always there. That Kol Hashem is still today reverberating throughout the world in some spiritual sense. But Velo Pasak, ki koloi chozok v'kayom l'olam. Can you see Rashi's words? The voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by definition, is the koil of the Ein Sof, is the voice of the infinite, is the voice of something which is not within time, it's beyond time, and therefore Velo Yasaf means it never stopped. So according to this interpretation, Yasaf comes from the word Sof. Sof means an end. Velo Yasaf, it never ended. It never ended. Right? The word Saf in modern Hebrew sometimes means the boundary or the threshold. Al Hasaf means at the threshold. Okay? Velo Yasaf means it never ended. It never had a Sof. That's how Rashi starts off. And then he goes on to say, Dovo Acher. Everybody with me? I'm in the last two lines on page one. Dovo Acher. Velo Yosaf means Lo Hosif Laharos Beosapumbi. It never happened again. It was a one-off. The Matan Torah at Har Sinai happened only once. Velo Yasaf. Yasaf means it never continued, because the word Yasaf could also come from the word Lohosif. Lohosif means to continue, right? When Rachel Imenu had her first son, she called him Yosef. Yosef Hashem Li Ben Acher. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should continue to give me another child. Okay? So here we have an interesting word. Lo Yosaf can mean two opposite ideas. One is that it never stopped, and one is that it stopped immediately. That it stopped straight away. That it never continued. It never continued and it never stopped. Okay? So we're having read this, so Rashi often gives us more than one Peirush, but it's very rare that Rashi gives us a Peirush of two diametrically opposite Peirushim, that they mean exactly the opposite of each other. That's very rare in Rashi. Usually it's certain different Peirushim which are not mutually exclusive. These two Peirushim appear to be mutually exclusive. Interestingly, there's another place in the Torah, in Parshas Vayeshev, with Yehuda and Tamar, the famous story of Yehuda and Tamar, where he sleeps with Tamar, and she gives birth afterwards to Peretz and Zerach, and they are the future of Malchus Yehuda and Malchus Beis David, right? And it says that he conceded. Yehuda said, Tzod Koimeni, and then it says, Velo Yosaf Od Ledato. What was the nature of Yehuda's relationship with Tamar after these children were born, after he conceded that they were his children? It says that below Yosaf Od Ledata, says Rashi there as well, exactly the same two Peirushim. It's a Gemara in Seita Daf Yud, but the Gemara says below Yosaf Od Ledata could mean he never lived with her again. He lived with her once. She conceived these twins, Peretz and Zerach, and he never lived with her again because she was his daughter-in-law, right? He wasn't going to live with her again. Right? Or it could mean Bela Yosef Aladata means he never stopped living with her. In other words, she was his wife and companion for life, right? So you have two seemingly diametrically opposite Peirushim on the same word, Bela Yosef. Saf has got this ambiguity built into it. Okay, so far so good. Let me just briefly, again, there's a lot of material on this, let me just briefly give you an idea which I enjoyed very much from Rav Tzadok HaKohen from Lublin. A very profound vort. If you want to say over a Dvar Torah this week at the table, Rav Tzadok HaKohen from Lublin is a beautiful, classic piece of Hasidus, but really, a really fabulous insight. Because Tzadok HaKohen from Lublin, as a matter of principle, will always say about multiple Peirushim and one Pasuk, Elu ve'elu divri elokim chayim. You think they are incompatible with each other? actually, they are both true at the same time. So you might think, well, wait a minute, how can they both be true at the same time? One of them means it stopped and it never continued, and the other means it continued forever. How can they both be at the same time? Says sort of going from Lublin, something very profound. He says, at Har Sinai, we received Torah Shebiksav and Torah Shebalpeh. He says, Torah Shebiksav v'lo Yosaf means that was it. It was a one-off moment of Gilui Shechina. And after the end of Har Sinai was the Siluk Shechina. Klal Yisrael never again heard the Dvar Hashem directly to them without going through a Novi. This was a one-off situation, but that's Torah Shebiktav. Torah Shebalpeh, it never stopped. Torah Shebalpeh v'lo Yosaf, it continues forever. Torah Shebalpeh is something v'chaya olam nota b'secheinu. It's something eternal. It's something which continues in every generation. Chidushi Torah, deeper understanding and explanations of Torah. That is something which v'lo Yosaf means it never ended. Says Ratzadok HaKarim, both are true about the Kol Hashem at Har Sinai. At the same time, both it stopped and it never stopped. That's Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebalpeh. I think that's a beautiful way. It just shows that sometimes you've got to drill down a little bit deeper into understanding the concept, and you get a whole new understanding. And then he adds something very beautiful, as he always does, Rav Tzadok HaKohen. He says it's a curious minhag. Right. Okay, this is a special effects that we have. He said, why is it that the Yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu on Zion Adar is generally commemorated as a sad day? Lots of people fast on that day, and the Chevra Kadishas make a sad day out of it. It's a day of sadness in Klal Yisrael, Zion Adar. And yet, the Yahrzeit of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai on Lag BaOmer is a yontif. So what's going on here? Ask Rav Tzadok HaKohen, how come the Minag Yisrael makes a yontif out of the Yahrzeit of Shimon Bar Yochai and a tainus out of the Yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu? So he says, if you understand the below Yosaf principle, you'll understand this. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu is Torah Shebichtav. That happened once, and every successive generation is one generation further away from that great moment of Gilui Shechina, and that's a sadness to us, and that's the Yahrzeit, and that's the Yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was, of course, the star pupil of Rabbi Akiva, and he represents the Mishnah and the Torah Shebalpeh. Torah Shebalpeh, each generation, it accumulates and gets greater, and it's growing all the time, so that's a simcha for us. So the simcha in Lag BaOmer is the growth of Torah Shebalpeh. And the tainus on Zion Adar, it's beautiful, no? I think it's a beautiful insight into our minhagim. That the minhagim of Klal Yisrael are not random, and they are, neither of these two things are halachic, you understand? Not the tainus on Zion Adar, and not the simcha on Lag BaOmer. Neither are halachic, both are in the realm of minhag. But the minhagim are not random. They have deeper roots. Says Rav Tzadok HaKohen, if you understand this Rashi properly, the ambiguity in below Yosaf, you'll understand that distinction. Okay. Okay, text number 8 on page number 2 is another pasuk from this week's parsha. V'osisa hayosha v'hatoiv be'enei Hashem. L'man yitav l'cha u'boso v'yorashto es ha'oretz ha'tova sh'nishpa Hashem la'avosecha. V'osisa hayosha v'hatov, these three words are understood by Chazal to be one of the most important moral and ethical principles in the entire Torah. The yoshar and the tov. The yoshar is, of course, yashrus, which means integrity and reliability, and ne'emonus is all part of yashrus, right? And the hatov means you should do what is good. How do you know what is good? You've got to know what is good. In other words, there is a principle here which is, in a sense, meta-halachic. It's beyond halacha. Even after you've done all the halachas are about osur umuta, about do's and don'ts, about what's forbidden and permitted. Beyond the permitted and forbidden, there is also the moral and ethical realm, right? Where a person has to have a moral sense for which there are no rules in the halachic sense of the word, and that's called Vosiso Hayoshavata. Now, this is a very big subject, and I just wanted to bring you one or two interesting little sources on the subject, but it is a very important issue which not everybody is aware of. People tend to think that living as an Orthodox Jew is a matter of simply following the rules. And of course, that's true. We all have the same Shulchan Aruch, we all have the same Mishnah Berurah, and there are rules to follow. This is kosher, this is treif. This is mutar on Shabbos, this is osur on Shabbos. But beyond the halachic system, there are moral principles, right? And they are Bo'osisa, Hayosha, V'hatoiv is one of them. And a lot has been written about that. I'll give you an example in text number 9. What does Rashi say says Rashi, a very, very brief Rashi, Hayosha v'hatov, zu pshara. What is a pshara? A compromise. What does it mean, a compromise? Any of you have ever been to a din Torah, right? Or a bez din? So they will listen to the two sides of the discussion. You know, the two sides of the case are being presented to the dayanim, and they have a choice. Either they can paskan al pi hadin, or they can paskan al pi pshara. Pshara is a compromise, meaning you take everything into consideration, and you find a way through. A compromise means, really, that neither side get exactly what they want, right? But both sides get enough that they don't come out of it feeling that they've been completely disregarded. So pshara has a very important role to play in terms of how people feel after the case is closed, right? What happens at a compromise? Now, not every case is deserving of a compromise, and that's part of the discretion of dayanim. Dayanim are supposed to have the moral discretion to know when to apply the din and when to apply the compromise. And Rashi says, "V'lifnim mishuras hadin." Can you see this, Rashi? Rashi says, "Pshara v'lifnim." What does it mean to go lifnim mishuras hadin? It's not michutz l'shuras hadin. Michutz l'shuras hadin means you don't know what the din is. Knowing the din means you know what the halacha requires. But then there's something. There's a moral principle here. Sometimes, in legal terms, for those people around here who are lawyers or judges, you find sometimes in legal systems the judge will say, "This is the law, but it's not equitable." A judge will sometimes say, "There is such a thing. There's law and there's equity." Equity means that the law is following the rules. Equity means there's a moral principle here, which needs to be applied. And that's what's happening here, Bo'asisa Hayosha V'Hatayv, that the Torah here is giving us a principle which is a moral and a spiritual principle, about which a lot is written in the Gemara. I can't resist telling you a very short anecdote that took place with me about 15 years ago in my capacity as the Rav of a community in London. Some of the people here were part of that community then. So let me tell you very briefly the following story. It was a very good example of Osisa Hayosha V'Hatov, a beautiful example. So the story was, one of the members of my community, a young married man with small children and was struggling to make a parnosa, and he was a salesman, a diamond salesman, and he used to go around, he would get diamonds from a diamond distributor, and he would sell them on commission, and that's how he lived. And that went on for about 10 years or so, 15 years. And his distributor, the man who he worked for, was a multimillionaire Hasidic Yid, a big diamond dealer in London, and the arrangement was good for both of them, right? He sold his diamonds, he got his commission, and everybody's happy. After about, I don't know, 10 years, maybe more than that, this young man decided to move on to a different job, and he told his employer that he's moving on. The employer then looked at all the accounts of all that he had sold for him over the last 15 years, and he decided that, you know, the diamond business doesn't work always so documented precisely as other businesses maybe do, that this young man actually owed him about £15,000. That was outstanding. It wasn't a question of theft or anything. It was a question of diamonds that had been given, and he'd got back the money, etc., etc., etc. There was outstanding money. Okay, the young man came to me crying, and he says, "Look," he says, "I owe him £15,000. I don't have £15,000. I'm paying mortgages. I'm paying school fees. I'm struggling to keep afloat. I haven't got £15,000. So I said, do you think you owe him the money? He said, I don't know. If he says I do, he's got all the accounts and everything. Maybe I do. I don't know. Can you deal with it? He said to me, you deal with it. So I said, Shkoyach, thank you very much. I rang up this Hasidic Yid. I said, come round to my house and show me what the story is and I'll help you sort this out. So he came round with his file and we looked at some of the things. We won't go into all the details, etc. At the end, he showed me, and it seemed to be pretty clear, that indeed this young man, over a period of about 15 years, owed him about that sort of money. It was £12,000, it was something like that, close to £15,000. So I said, look, he hasn't got the money. I'll organise a schedule of repayments. He'll pay you, I don't know, a few hundred pounds a month over a period of 5 or 6 years. And is that acceptable to you? He says, yes, fine, very good. So he's closing the file. He's just about to get up. And it occurs to me that here we are, two yidden sitting down in my Beis HaMedrash at home. And he's come to see me and he wants to resolve it properly. I said to him, would you like to do a mitzvah? Okay, it's a question one's allowed to ask somebody. Would you like to do a mitzvah? I said to him. So as a good Hasidic Yid, he almost as a knee-jerk reaction, he said, yes, of course I'd like to do a mitzvah. I said, I've got a mitzvah for you to do. Forget this debt. Walk away from it. Forget it. To you it's nothing. It means nothing to you whatsoever. Right? And to this young man, it's a tremendously heavy burden. Walk away. He said, well, you just told me that he owes me the money. And we're going to make, I said, yes, if you insist on the din, I will make sure that he repays you every month. But I'm telling you that there is lifnim mishras hadin, there's a mitzvah to be done here. The mitzvah is, he worked well for you for many years. You're not accusing him of any theft or anything. There was no misdeeds of any sort here being done. And you benefited and he owes you the money. It's true, he owes you the money, but walk away from it. And he sat there for a few seconds looking at me, and he thought, I must be crazy. He's looking at me with that look on his face. This rabbi's out of his mind. You know, £15,000, I should walk away from it. But at a certain moment, the penny dropped. And he said, yes, you're right. Thank you very much. Here's the file, you can keep it. And he walked away, and he was moichel the debt, not because that was the din, but because of a sisa hayosha v'hatev. This young man had worked for him for many years, and he was struggling to make a living. And for him, this money was completely irrelevant. He's a millionaire, multimillionaire, right? So this is a moment of a sisa hayosha v'hatev. And that was going through my mind at the time. I thought, just before he leaves, I'm going to, what they call in English, to fly a kite. I'm going to see whether I can maybe appeal to another side of his brain, not the din, businessman side of his brain, but the moral side of his brain. Why not ask him? This isn't completely the end of the story. The end of the story is that about a year later, the man passed away, the Hasidic Yid passed away, and he wasn't part of my community. I didn't even know him so well. But he passed away, and on the day that he passed away, in his community, his Rav was abroad. So his widow rings me up on the day that he passes away and says, would you please officiate at his levaya? I said, okay, if that's what you want me to do, I'll do it. You know, why should I not officiate? It was quite a big levaya. He was part of a large circle of businessmen. So I'm walking to the levaya, and I'm thinking, what am I going to talk about? And I thought, you know what? I'm going to tell them this story. So I said this story of this fellow's levaya, and they were all completely amazed because he was known as a very hard businessman, a very, very tough businessman. But I said, there's no question that this man has got a chelek l'olam haba. Why? V'asisa hayoshar v'hatev. There was a moment when his sense of moral, his moral judgment was more powerful than his sense of din and entitlement. He went lifnim mishuras hadin, and that was a mitzvah gedela. So I was able to say that story over, right, at his levaya, and that was for me a moment of satisfaction that I said something beautiful about this man who I hardly knew. I mean, I didn't know him at all. He wasn't somebody who I met ever, really. But he was somebody who I had that one contact with, and he did this one mitzvah, but it was worth mentioning it at the time. And whenever I read this pasuk, v'asisa hayosha v'hatov, I'm thinking about this particular event. Last 5 minutes of the Shia, I just want to mention something. Which actually, so you can see, I haven't even got through, never even touched the third sheet or whatever. You'll have to wait for that for another time. Because what, apart from the Aseres HaDibros in Voeschanam, there's also Kriyas Shema in Voeschanam. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad V'haftu Es Hashem Elokecha. So I just want to mention something relating to something that I mentioned last week. So last week I mentioned to you that Sefer Devarim is unique. Right? And I mentioned to you that the Torah says at the beginning of Sefer Devarim, Hoil Moshe Be'er Es HaTorah Hazos, that now Moshe is beginning to explain the Torah. And I asked the question, which the Mefarshim asked, what do you mean now he's beginning to explain the Torah? For 40 years he's been explaining the Torah. He's in the last month of his life. What's he been doing for 40 years? That's all they've been doing in the Midbar. They didn't have to plow the land or sow the land or reap the land, didn't fight any battles, didn't build any houses. What were they doing for 40 years? They were only learning Torah. So what could the Pasuk possibly mean that now he began Be'er Esa, now he began to explain the Torah? So last week I gave you the HaMikdava, who explains that it's got to do with Torah Shebal Peh, but today I want to give you a different Torah, and which is quite an amazing idea, which I'll leave you with. And that is the uniqueness of Sefer Devarim is this. Moshe Rabbeinu, indeed, in the last 5 weeks of his life, which is Sefer Devarim, he begins to tell Klal Yisrael things that he had never told them before. What does he begin to say to them? He begins to speak to them about the spiritual quality of leading a Jewish life. Moshe Rabbeinu suddenly says things like, "Va'atem hadveikim b'Hashem Elokeichem chayim kolchem hayom." You're supposed to live a life of dveikut. He's never said that before. He suddenly says, "Va'ohavta es Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshavcha umadecha." We're supposed to live with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a relationship of love. He's never said that before. He suddenly says, "Vosisa hayosha b'hatayv," that there are these great moral ethical principles. He's never said that before. He suddenly says, "V'holachto bedrachov," you must go in the ways of God, imitate God. He's never said that before. Moshe Rabbeinu in Sefer Devarim gives us the spiritual goals of the Torah, not just the halachas of the Torah, not just the do's and don'ts. He suddenly gives us a whole different spiritual dimension, such that every mitzvah we do has now got a double purpose. One purpose in the mitzvah is simply to do the Rotzon Hashem, to fulfill the requirements and the instructions of a mitzvah. Mitzvah comes from the word tzivui, right? That we are instructed and we fulfill the instructions. But that's only half the story. That's Bereishis Shemos Vayikra Bamidbar. Devarim tells us that doing mitzvahs brings us into a connection of Dveikus and Ahava to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that in fact we become different people. We bring Kedusha into our lives. And that's the meaning, and with this I'll leave you, every mitzvah we do, we make a bracha, before we eat matzah, or before we hear the shofar, before we put on tzitzis, we say, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav v'tzivanu. Now these are two different things. The v'tzivanu means, I'm now going to do what I've been told to do. And that's what I'm about to do. There's a mitzvah of a tzivui, there's a mitzvah and a mitzvah, and we are connected by a mitzvah, we are connected by an instruction, and that's what I'm about to do. But there's something else, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvah, that the mitzvah is designed to sanctify us. It's designed to transform us into human beings who have a bit of kedusha in our lives, who can aspire to dveikus v'atem hadveikim, to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to ahavas Hashem. That is Sefer Devarim. Sefer Devarim gives us this whole new layer of ruchnias into our Jewish life, which the previous, it's an amazing thing when you think about it, that nowhere in the first four books of the Chumash does Moshe Rabbeinu speak about ahavas Hashem, right? Or about v'olachta bedrachov, or any of these things. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, the mitzvah of Yichud Hashem. He's never said that before. He's never mentioned that before. He's left it to the last month of his life. And maybe there's also an educational principle involved here a little bit, say some of the Mefarshim, that before you teach people the spiritual goals of the Torah, you have to teach them the do's and don'ts. There are people who dive straight into the malachim and the ruchnias of the Torah without knowing the do's and don'ts, the halachas of the Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu spends 40 years on the halachas of the Torah, and then he tells us at the very end, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You've got to focus on the oneness of our Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Ahavas Hashem, and with that, Moshe Rabbeinu leaves us with Sefer Devarim, and I'm also going to leave you on a Tuesday morning with some of these thoughts. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have, and please God, as of September the 4th, I will be here at 11:30 in the morning. Thank you very much.